debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman here with you. There's a couple of things that I wanted to just lay on the table and have a conversation with you about. How did the Supreme Court justify in Citizens United the whole idea that corporations should be able to participate in politics? And I pointed out that the court basically took the First Amendment and turned it inside out and said that the right to speak is also a right to be heard, and that we average people have a right to hear. And if billionaires and giant corporations are stopped by the law from inserting themselves into politics, from running political ads, then we don't get to hear those ads, and our free speech rights are inhibited because we didn't hear the ads. That's the logic of Citizens United. That's how bizarre it is. But hey, 5 out of 9 justices on the Supreme Court not only bought that logic, but, you know, invested an enormous amount of time and effort into selling that logic to the rest of us. Now we've got a new kind of logic on the horizon, and this is something that has gotten very little attention about Amy Coney Barrett. And I think really we should be paying attention to this. There's this thing called 14th Amendment denialism. You've heard about climate deniers, you've heard about democracy deniers, you've heard about, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, COVID deniers, mask denier. Well, now there's 14th Amendment denial. Now, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed in the years immediately after the Civil War to end slavery in the United States. The 13th Amendment explicitly says the only way that slavery can survive going forward in the United States is if somebody has committed a crime and is imprisoned under law. If you are imprisoned under law, you can still be considered a slave, but otherwise slavery has ended in the United States. That's the 13th Amendment. The 14th Amendment has a couple of provisions in it. The two main ones are, number one, if you are born in the United States, you are a citizen of the United States. And number two, and actually this is number one, the big part of it, is that every citizen of the United States is entitled to equal protection under the law. It's called the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And that has been used to basically enforce our civil rights laws. The 14th Amendment is the cornerstone on which the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and multiple, you know, civil rights laws have been passed, is on that part of the 14th Amendment. And then the 15th Amendment, which was passed a year or so after the 14th Amendment, says that people can vote regardless of their previous position of servitude. So, end of history lesson, right? Okay, there's your history lesson. Now comes Amy Coney Barrett saying, and these are actual quotes, these are two quotes that she has written about the 14th Amendment. Quote, Congress has to decide whether to rely on the power conferred by the possibly illegitimate 14th Amendment. Possibly illegitimate? And then she wrote, the originalist legislator may have to face questions such as the legitimacy of the 14th Amendment. Now, this legitimacy argument is one that has been made by apologists for Jim Crow literally since the 1870s. And it goes something like this. When the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed and put into the Constitution, the Confederate states had no say in them because they were not allowed back into the Union until after they had amended their own state constitutions to strip out slavery. That literally, that was the core of Reconstruction. We're going to reconstruct these states. We're going to rebuild these states, the legal structure of these states, so that they're no longer slave states. And so the argument, the 14th Amendment denier argument, is that because, you know, a bunch of states, the former Confederate states, did not have a say in arguing or passing or ratifying the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, therefore they are illegitimate. Therefore, we shouldn't have to pay any attention to them. Therefore, slavery is not outlawed in the United States, 13th Amendment. Therefore, you don't have the right of equal protection under the law, regardless of what minority group you may belong to, the 14th Amendment. Therefore, you don't have birthright citizenship if your parents were illegal immigrants, to use the phrase of the right, from Mexico, for example, and you were born here. And therefore, if you're black in the United States, or Hispanic in the United States, or Native American in the United States, you don't have a specific right to vote. The 15th Amendment. That deals specifically with black people, but ancestors of slaves. But broadly speaking, this is what it is. And, I mean, this is totally mind-boggling, right? Georgia's state legislature passed a resolution. This is the title of the resolution, quote, a memorial to Congress of the United States of America urging them to enact such legislation as they may deem fit to declare the 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution of the United States were never validly adopted and that they are null and void of no effect, end quote. Now that passed the Georgia legislature. It was 1957, but it passed the Georgia legislature. This is a white supremacist mythology, period, full stop. There is no other way to describe this than that. And on at least two occasions that we know about, Amy Coney Barrett has questioned the legitimacy of the 14th Amendment. In this context,
you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let us hope somebody asks about that at her confirmation hearings, assuming that we get to that point. We'll be back with you. Tom Hartman here. Did you know that the Second Amendment was written to protect the slave patrols in South Carolina and Georgia back in the day? It's in my new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment. Check it out. Thanks so much. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to say about Amy Coney Barrett. The first thing is I was struck by, I was not impressed at all by the way she speaks. She just, hard to put my finger on, but she sounded immature in some regard for a person of
44 years old. She's 44 years old, isn't she? 48?
Well, I'm sorry, but she spoke more kind of like a high school or a college student. She pronounces poignant with the hard G, poignant. Is that because that's the way they said it in the during the days of the colonial period? Is that what she's trying to get at? I mean,
it's her originalism coming out, Paul. I mean, she's from Indiana, right? And I'm from Michigan, and I've never, you know, which is the kind of same part of the Midwest. I never heard anybody pronounce poignant with a hard G. That's the kind of thing that happens to people who read words and never hear them.
Well, you know, Tom, when I was teaching special education, I had a kid who pronounced the word walk. He's pronounced walk, and he said walk and talk. Pronounced the L in walk and talk. And I didn't understand that. The other kids used to make fun of him. And then when I met with his mother for a parent-teacher conferences, and she said, yeah, his whole problem is he talks too much. And I went, oh, okay, now I see where the problem comes from. So there's some problem there. But as far as what she said about the Affordable Care Act, that it's unconstitutional because it didn't exist in original times, absolutely false. I have an article, or I had one here, and it's by Harvard Law Professor Einar R. Elhauger. Elhauger is E-L-H-O-U-G-E-R. Einar is I-E-N-E-R. Einar R. Elhauger, who wrote an article during this same period of the Affordable Care Act debate in the Supreme Court when Scalia was there, and he cited Congress. Congress passed a law in 1798 requiring seafaring businesses to provide hospitalization insurance for their sailors. So he was saying, no, it has been required before by the government on private industry. And when Antonin Scalia said, can the government require you to buy broccoli? Well, Professor Elhauger says in 1792, Congress required that all men between the ages of 18 and 44 have an operating musket and a sufficient amount of powder, whatever, a measure of powder, and a certain number of ball for shots. So, Congress has required broccoli and medical insurance in the original times. Yeah. So she's absolutely false, and I'm surprised she doesn't know about that if she's such a brilliant legal scholar. I know about it, and I'm not even a lawyer. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I hope that kind of makes it into the arguments. I'm familiar with that law. We talked about that back during the Obamacare debates. In fact, I used that argument against, you know, right-wingers on a couple of occasions. I don't think that any of this, when you look at the ideology that is presented by people like Alito and Thomas and, you know, to a large extent, Roberts, he's not totally insane, and Handmaiden Amy here. And if anybody's offended by my calling her that, let me know. And why? Is that sexist? I don't know. You know, I wouldn't attack her, for example, for what her voice sounds like. I don't think she has a lot of control over that. But, Paul, they're not basing their arguments on logic. That's why they have originalism. Originalism allows that. You know, it's like religion. And it's like the guy who, the evangelical minister who gets up on TV or the radio or in front of the congregation and basically says God told him that abortion is wrong. I mean, there's actually several places in the Bible where God causes abortions.
Numbers chapter 5 as a recipe for abortions. But on that line, I would ask Judge Coney Barrett, how would you possibly relate the Bible in the 21st century? Because certainly there's no way you can read the Bible in English and propose to think that it's relevant in the 21st century. You would have to be an expert in reading Greek and also an expert in Greco-Roman history to know, have any idea what the hell the Bible really meant in original times.
Yeah, and there's, you know, Elaine Pagels and Peter Funk, and I mean, there's some brilliant scholars out there who are deconstructing that stuff, but in my mind, that should all stay in the realm of religion, frankly, period, full stop. Paul, thanks for the call. Charles in Miami. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Love your show every day.
Thank you.
I've been riding with you since about, what, 2001, 2002?
I think we started the show in 3, so, yeah.
Okay. Back to what Paul was just saying, just to piggyback on that, just like there's an Old Testament, there's a New Testament. So people actually evolve. Our civilization has evolved. You know, the way we govern as well has evolved. So we can't, I don't believe in you have to be an originalist. You can keep the letter
of the law.
It's
a scam, Charles. It's just a scam. They're mind reading the founders, just like these preachers claim to mind read God. And sorry, it ain't real in either case.
Right, but what I wanted to call, what I was calling you about was, it's also a scam to think that the Supreme Court is, should pick our next president, because there's no way in the Constitution that says that. And what we should be arguing is, even if they put that judge on the court, then when Biden takes over with pack the court, they should even probably do a second election. If that's what it takes.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible if Trump actually steals this election, and particularly with help from the Supreme Court, it may produce the biggest reformation in the history of America. We'll see. We'll see. Charles, thank you for
the call.
You're
listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think people are seriously over it. They are sick and tired of the games and the BS and the corruption that comes out of the Republican Party. They're just sick of it. Hey, we have a new video up over at TomHartman.com. I really enjoy doing these separate from what we're doing on the air, because sometimes I can say things that I, you know, would be impolitic or inappropriate to say on the air, like the name of the website that I'm talking about in this video, and I lay it out and share it with you on the video. It's ratbleepingthecourts.com, and the bleeping, of course, is a word that you just can't say on the air that starts with F. And this website is just outing these judges that Donald Trump and the Federalist Society have been sending through Mitch McConnell's Senate like a frigging assembly line, and how unqualified they are, how hateful they are, how aggressively they've worked to screw students, to deny. Well, one of them actually said that women who are on birth control pills, that should be reason to fire people. Right? I mean, this is, it's just insane. You can check it out over at TomHartman.com. So just a few more thoughts about Handmaiden Amy that Donald Trump wants to put on the Supreme Court. Not only was she part of the conspiracy to steal the 2000 election for George W. Bush, along with Brett Kavanaugh and John Roberts, not only was she part of that, but when you look at her record, it gets rather concerning, shall we say, at the very least. This is from a piece by Terry Schwadron, who is a reporter with DC Reports. And he writes, he says, can job applicants sue employers whose policies have a disproportionately deleterious effect on older people? Barrett said no. Should courts halt the deportation of an immigrant who faces torture if they are deported at home? Barrett said no. Should the courts protect refugees who have been denied asylum on the basis of prejudice and xenophobia, not on the quality of their refugee claim? Barrett said no. Should the courts shield prisoners from unjustified violence by correction officers? If guards in prisons routinely beat or rape prisoners, should the courts intervene? Barrett said no. Should minors be allowed to terminate a pregnancy without telling their parents if a judge has found that they're mature enough to make the decision? And, you know, several of these cases had to do with girls in their very early teen years, 13, 14, 15 years old, 16 years old, who had been raped by family members, by brothers, fathers, uncles, etc. And so they couldn't go to their parents and say, may I have permission for an abortion, or they felt they couldn't. So they go to a judge. Should they be able to get an abortion under circumstances like that? Handmaiden Amy Barrett said no. Should women be permitted to obtain an abortion if they discover that the fetus has a severe abnormality? This child is going to be born with basically no brain, for example, you know, hydroencephalitis, or spina bifida, an open spinal cord, so that they're not only profoundly retarded, but, you know, will never, I mean, this is what happened, I don't want to go into it. Anyway, so that they'll never get, even if they live to be 20, which is an old age for people with spina bifida, they'll never be intellectually or developmentally more than, you know, 1 or 2 years old, still wear diapers, never talk, never speak. Should parents, knowing that this is what they have, or a child that's probably going to die within days of birth, should they be allowed to get an abortion. Amy Coney Bryant, handmaiden Amy, says no. She actually wrote a piece critical of John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, who found a way to save Obamacare by striking down the individual mandate, but saying everything else was good. Does she think he was wrong? Yes, she thinks he's wrong. And the week after the election, the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments from the Trump administration that it's time for the insurance company to stop being burdened by the requirement that they have to provide, they have to pay for the health insurance of people who have, who are now sick and in the hospital because of a pre-existing condition. Oh yeah, that lung cancer you've got now in your 60s, that's because you smoked when you were 16 years old. We're not going to pay for your treatment. That was what was normal. Right? I mean, that was just what was absolutely, oh, you've got shingles? Well, you had chickenpox when you were a kid. That's a pre-existing condition. Oh, you've got, you know how they play the game. And Handmaiden Amy wants to bring this back. I am totally respectful of her religion. If she wants to be, a fundamentalist Catholic, fine. But don't bring it into the law. There is no place for that in the law, frankly. Judges need to be deciding the law based on what the law says. And by the way, the law says right now, of course, it was law created by the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade and Casey v. Planned Parenthood, or Planned Parenthood v. Casey, but the law says basically, first trimester of a pregnancy, you can get an abortion. Second trimester, you got to jump through a bunch of hoops. Third trimester, damn near impossible. Unless there's a screaming emergency. I mean, that's basically the law right now. But, oh no, they want to take us back to 1896. Separate but equal? Back there, yeah! No abortion rights? No! What's next? Women have to have their father or their husband's signature to get a credit card? Should we go back to 1972?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
After all, the handmaid cult that she's part of says that, you know, she has to defer to her husband. And that was the rationale back in 72.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back. Alice in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Alice, what's up?
Hi, I'm calling about the nominee's religion also. I understand, mm-hmm. I call it a cult rather than a denomination, and she has taken a pledge to her husband to obey his commands, I guess, for life. It's a lifetime agreement that she made. Mm-hmm. So I think we should have her husband interview the senators also, since if he doesn't like a law, he could tell her don't vote in favor of it or vote against it, and we need to know what his thoughts are. He would slow down the process.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I get it, and I'm probably going to have to stop calling her handmaiden Amy because it really focuses too much on this narrow spectrum of what could be considered her personal life. But, yeah. You know, she has on numerous occasions in public said that her mission, these are my words, not hers, but basically her mission is to infuse the law with Christianity, with her religion. And I find that very troubling. But she's also taken a whole bunch of positions that are just very hostile to fundamental values and rights in the United States, like going back to separate but equal. But that's an interesting theory, Alice. Let's interview her husband. Thank you. Not sure I agree with it, but I want to digest that one. Denise in Calumet, Michigan. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Well, I have to tell you, Tom, I called Jack Bergman, my congressman, who's Republican and I'm not. I called him so many times, and finally about the Social Security issue, I called and I said, I know I'm not going to hear from you. You probably know I'm not Republican, so I don't expect to hear from you. And now I have a guy named Mike from his Washington, D.C. office that is assigned to call me whenever I call.
Really?
Yes.
Is that good?
Every time I guess that's good because he tries to tell me things that, you know, and I give him my opinion, but he tries to tell me that, you know, Jack is fighting for our Social Security, and 90% of his constituents up here are probably on Social Security or ready to be. And, you know, it's just kind of like, I've got this guy, and he calls me now, but I have not heard from him since I called about what might happen with our election and my concerns about Trump messing with our election. I have not heard yet back from him on that one. So we'll see.
Well, it's a good thing that you've got even a Republican congressman is actually doing constituent services, that he's got somebody on the ball to call you. That's good. Denise, keep us up to date. That's that's a great start. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. I called about Trump's taxes, but I'd like to say something about the Supreme Court. First, I heard a liberal and a moderate, quote-unquote moderate, talk about the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, what they thought of that. And, of course, the liberal was saying how tragic it was, it couldn't have come at a worse time, etc. But then the so-called moderate said, yes, it's tragic, but if Ruth Bader Ginsburg had resigned when Obama was president, Obama could have appointed a liberal like Merrick Garland. You see, did you see the trickery there? Merrick Garland is not a liberal. And see, this is what causes a lot of problems with people, because that sounds so reasonable, all right? But
yeah, Merrick Garland was the choice of Republican Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch. He was the one who recommended Merrick Garland to Obama, because Obama said, you know, it's late in my term. I've got this case. I don't want to make it huge and contentious. And it's Scalia's seat, so it really should be a moderate. Who do you suggest? And that's where it came to. But with regard to Trump's taxes, Dave, I'm concerned that he's going to spin. Well, I know he's going to spin this by saying, I'm a smart guy. Nobody likes to pay taxes. I figured out a way to pay less taxes. And I think probably most Republicans and most of the people in his base will think that that's a wonderful thing. That's why I'm not focusing on how little he paid in income taxes. I don't care what he pays in income taxes. I know that you can game that, you know. I'm concerned about how much he owes, that he owes $400 million to somebody, and we have no idea who it is. Back to you, Dave.
Well, yeah, and I know you know the story about Mark Burnett and the Celebrity Apprentice outtakes, but I've been obsessed with it, okay? And you're probably a lot smarter than me on that. But Mark Burnett told Tom Arnold that he didn't want to release the outtakes of Trump saying the N-word because it would make Trump more popular. Now, this was driving poor Tom Arnold crazy, but I get what Mark Burnett is saying. And I think it's the same with the taxes. Look, Russia's behind this. All right, we created an anti-tax revolution in the former Soviet states, all right, according to the KGB. We did that. And they are getting payback. They're getting payback by pushing racism, and they're pushing tax contempt among right-wingers, because they know most people in America, I mean, not most, but a lot, don't even know the purpose of taxes. They don't understand that it makes you a good citizen. They think it's some sort of a Ponzi scheme by the government and stuff. But I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And it's also, you know, Putin is on record as saying that he thought the biggest tragedy to ever befall his country was the breaking up of the Soviet Union. And he blames it on the United States, perhaps correctly. And so, you know, is this revenge? Is the Trump presidency revenge? I think there's a chance that that's the case. Dave, thanks for the call. Wow, what a day. Douglas in Crystal City, Missouri. Hey, Douglas, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I got a question, and I'll take the answer off air. They keep talking about expanding the Supreme Court to nullify the picks. They've also got the ability to decrease it. Now, if they went down to five, how does that work? Would the least senior justices be the ones that have to vacate, or can they make them vacate?
No. This has happened twice before. In the election, after John Adams lost the election of 1801, him and the Federalists reduced the size of the Supreme Court by one to deny Jefferson any nominees. Congress reversed that a year and a half later. But, you know, it was relatively a non-issue. There was an open seat at the time. And then when Andrew Johnson became president, after Lincoln was assassinated, the size of the Supreme Court was 10, and they reduced it down to 7, as I recall. And, you know, there were still members on the Supreme Court. So basically what they were saying was, because one guy had died or had retired, I'm pretty sure he had died just before Lincoln was assassinated. So there was an open seat on the Supreme Court. So basically what they were saying is, not only can you not fill this open seat, but two more people can die and you can't fill those seats either. So the court would have, you know, slowly shrunk down to that 7 people size, ultimately had that stayed in place. Actually, what happened was Ulysses Grant was sworn in as president a couple of years later, at the end of Andrew Johnson's term, and as a result, Congress met and changed the size of the court to 9, which is where it's been ever since, which is where it is right now. So that's how it would work, Douglas. Make sense?
Thank you. Yeah, it does.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Hello.
John in San Diego. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi. I've listened to you for a long time and read your books. I love it. I'm pushing for a big stall before the election on the nomination of Barrett to replace RBG. And there are a number of things that Schumer has in his context where he could He has a weak stall, but also for every vote, he could require a quorum, which would require the Republicans not to be campaigning, but they're in all 51 if he keeps his people off the floor. There are stalls that he has, and of course, the impeachment thing that Pelosi has would really stall them. If we get past the election and Kelly can win in Arizona, like it looks like, they'll only need one more Republican between the election and inauguration. And I think someone can come over. I don't know that Romney will, but someone could come over. I think we ought to push for that. We need to preserve the court. Otherwise, for a generation, we're conservative. What do you think?
It's a very real possibility, John, but I think it's a very remote possibility that any of those things will work. The simple reality is that, you know, we've been through this before. I mean, this country has been through this before. We had a Supreme Court back in the 1930s when FDR was trying to put the country back together after the Republican Great Depression that kept knocking down. I mean, they said you can't have laws against child labor. That's how wild it was, right? You can't have laws to protect labor unions. You know, you can't have laws that protect workers. In fact, that was what the Lochner decision.
He got the court to be less conservative in the 40s.
That's correct. He threatened to pack the court, and they said, okay, we'll change our minds. And, you know, I'm disheartened by the fact that we've got, you know, a person who's probably to the right of Clarence Thomas about to go onto the court. But I don't think that it's the end of the Republic. It might be the end of Obamacare, but that may be the birth of something really great. I mean, there, you know,
maybe
Susan
we'll
Sarandon
get
at a certain
from Biden. Do you think he could?
I think it's entirely possible, John. If the Supreme Court blows up Obamacare, I think it's entirely possible. And then if the Supreme Court says no, you can't have Medicare for all, you know, because Amy Coney Barrett is more or less on the record saying that, you know, that's her, the logic that she's applying to say that Obamacare should not exist is essentially the same logic that you would apply to say Social Security and Medicare shouldn't exist. They weren't contemplated
by
the founders.
They don't want that either. Sure.
Right. They weren't part of the original idea. So
if we can get enough of a majority in the Senate and or eliminate the filibuster, I think we can get some of those things with the real big.
Well, maybe we'll see. We'll see. But, you know, the thing is, and the point that I want to make, John, is let's not get all, oh, my God, oh, my God here. Right. I mean, there's wild stuff going on. Donald Trump, in all probability, is leaning hard on Ron DeSantis in Florida, because Ron DeSantis is the governor of the state where Donald Trump has his two largest and most money-losing properties in the United States, Doral and Mar-a-Lago. And they're losing a pile of money. They're losing millions of dollars a year. And he desperately wants Florida to open back up so that people will use his properties. And he's willing to kill people to get that. I mean, that, and that's like, oh, my God, you know, it's like we're despairing about this. And then, you know, the whole Supreme Court thing and Mitch McConnell and Trump is going to use Congress and the courts to try to steal the election. If all of that happens, if we get, you know, Auntie Barrett on the court, and Donald Trump is president, you know, is sworn back in on January 20th. And I mean, just every worst outcome you can imagine. I am still of the opinion. Now, I'm very concerned about all those things. And I'm frankly very upset about all those things. But I'm of the opinion that the idea of democracy, the ideal of an egalitarian nation, the notion that we all look out for each other in this country, that this country was created in part to promote the general welfare, as it says in multiple places in the Constitution, including its preamble that lays out its goals and purposes. I'm of the opinion that Americans won't allow this to stand. Now, I think, you know, we may be in for a very rough ride. I think if Trump can get himself sworn back in again, he's probably going to try and get us into a war to deflect our attention away from everything else that's going on. That'll suck up a lot of media time while he's, you know, trying to figure out what can he give to Mohammed bin Salman so Salman will give him $1 billion so he can pay off his loans that are coming due. But you can, and I promise you, I can virtually guarantee that that's the sort of thing that Trump is going to be doing, because that's exactly what Jared Kushner did with Trump's help. He needed $1 billion. His 555 or 666 Fifth Avenue property was going down in flames. And you know, what does he do? He goes off to the Middle East and stirs up some trouble and gets the money. You know, Trump will do the same thing. But all of that said, I don't think that we can allow ourselves to slide into despair, and I don't think that we should be freaking out. And I do believe that, and this is the point I started to make earlier, you know, Susan Sarandon back, you know, 4 years ago said that she was voting green, and people were like, oh my God, what if Donald Trump becomes president? And she says, then people will realize how screwed up and corrupt this system is and how much it needs to change. And I was horrified by that when she said it. And a lot of us were very pissed off by that whole thing. And we were campaigning really, really hard to get Hillary Clinton elected as president. But there is some truth to what she said. And America is a hell of a lot more woke than we were 4 years ago. And people are paying attention, and people are voting, and people are learning about civics. And, you know, I think we're going to get through this. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Tom Hartman here. Did you know that Chief Justice John Roberts, back when he worked for Ronald Reagan, came up with a way that Congress and the White House could get around the Supreme Court? Specifically, they were trying to blow up Roe v. Wade and Brown versus Board, but it could be used by Democrats right now. It's fascinating. It's in my new book, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. Check it out. Thanks so much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Janine in Atlanta, you think I should not call Amy Barrett a handmaiden? Do I have that right?
Handmaiden, yes. How are you doing? I've watched a show, and the title should be Auntie Amy.
Oh, so you're taking that from having watched the Handmaid's Tale TV program?
Yes.
Okay, I have not seen the program. Louise and I watched like the first one or two episodes, and it was so dark, it was like, this is going to give us nightmares, and so we just stopped. So Auntie is the title that's given, what, to the women in power?
Yes.
So, I mean, give me the rationale, Janine, for why I should refer to her as Auntie Amy rather than Handmaiden Amy.
Well, an auntie is in power, and a handmaiden has like no rights at all, just for baby making, and aunties in power, like Amy.
Right. So the handmaidens are basically the fodder for reproduction, and the aunties.
Mm-hmm. They're like the cattle ranchers, and the handmaidens are the cattle.
I got it. And an entirely appropriate metaphor too, I think. Janine, thank you for that. Thank you. I will start calling her Auntie Amy. It's all, you know, it's a little more, what is it, onomatopoeia? It sounds a little better too, so I like that. Thank you very much, Janine. That was great. Kaula in Brooklyn. Am I saying your name right?
Yes.
Hi, what's up?
Hi. Just wanted to piggyback on some of the issues you were speaking about. And what's really so troubling and devastating is that Amy Coney Barrett herself said that a president should not be eligible to Supreme Court pick in an election year. And she went on to say
she said that four years ago.
And she looked straight into the camera. And, it's like amazing, these people. And she also went on to say that pick should have a similar legal philosophy to their predecessor. And, you know, she's saying things that are the complete, she's making arguments that were the complete antithesis to what she's saying and doing presently. And how do you trust individuals with such power going into those seats and those institutions when they lack moral integrity, they lack legitimacy and credibility.
She's double illegitimate, if I may interrupt you real quickly, because we're going to hit a break here in a second. She is on the Seventh Circuit right now because Barack Obama appointed a black woman for her seat.
Right.
And Mitch McConnell refused to hold hearings on that black woman so that he could hold that seat open for Amy Coney Barrett. So when 2017 came along and Donald Trump, you know, was president, then Mitch McConnell rolls out Barrett and puts her in that seat. So she's sitting in a stolen seat right now.
Right. You know, it's just mind-boggling, and I'm really speechless. But, you know, the Republican Party, they don't know exactly what they've done to this nation, because I've never been so politically active or aware in my life. I donate to the Democratic contenders for Senate seats. I fundraise. I make phone calls. So we are paying attention. We are aware. We are becoming more knowledgeable. So I think that's one
we are
of the
woke.
Things that, yeah, we're woke.
Yeah. Cola, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. Callie, if I'm saying that right, in Marietta, California.
Kylie, yes.
Kylie.
My point is that when senators can say one thing, you know, 4 years ago, and then change their mind, and even especially when they have said, hold us accountable to what we say, and we don't, and the Senate, other senators don't, it undermines the integrity of the whole Senate. If we can't trust them to keep to their words, then nothing they say and nothing they do really matters. Why should we put our trust in them? So I think it's so important,
Kylie,
that...
Go ahead.
No, I just think it's so important that, you know, whoever's in charge there, that they be held accountable to what they say.
Yeah.
What can be done?
But the simple reality is that politicians have never been accountable for what they say other than at the ballot box. I mean, and that's how the system is designed, that you know, if you don't like the way that your politician is behaving, vote them out. But politicians lying to Americans is something that goes back to the John Adams administration. It's not new, and I'm not particularly hopeful that we're going to be able to, particularly the Republicans in the Senate. But, you know, hey, there are Democrats who lie to their constituents as well. You know, I put Joe Lieberman at the top of that list, although he's not in Congress anymore, but, you know, thinking of the Senate. I think that just complaining about them is not going to be enough, Kylie. You're in California.
No, I understand that just complaining about them is not enough, but nowadays we have them on tape. We have them speaking before the nation. We have them asking us to hold them accountable. So before, they could say things in private and it's all hearsay, but nowadays we have them on tape. Play their words back to them and hold them accountable. We as a people have to... How can we do anything? Voting takes every 2 years or every 4 years to change. By then, they could commit a multitude of sins against the American people, and nothing can be done.
Kylie, you're in California. The one thing that you can do, the person that you're talking about, by the way, is Lindsey Graham, as we both know. And, you know, Lindsey Graham, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, that, you know, will decide, that will recommend or will do the first pass on a Supreme Court nominee, famously said 4 years ago, you know, hold me to my word, right? You can use my words against me, that we should not be deciding a Supreme Court nominee in the last year of a president's term when they're up for re-election, and or when there's an election coming. I get that. The main thing that you could do as a resident of California is go to Jamie Harrison's website and help him out. Volunteer to phone bank for him. Send him a few bucks. Whatever it may be. Jamie Harrison actually is polling right now 50-50 with Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. And, you know, if you want to see Lindsey Graham pay the price for his lying to the American people and failing to keep his own word, the way to do that is to get him kicked out of the Senate. Get him replaced by Jamie Harrison. It's real simple. It's how our system is supposed to work. So, you know, go for it. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth.
With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Well, there's some interesting news out there that I think is worth taking note of. Amy Coney Barrett. I figured out why I kept saying Bryant. I'm old enough to remember Anita Bryant and her whole anti-gay crusade, and that was stuck in my unconscious mind, apparently. It kept bubbling up. But in any case, Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett, who I sometimes refer to as Auntie Amy, back in 2006, signed a full-page newspaper advertisement that said, "We defend the right to life from fertilization to natural death." She signed this on behalf of a group that not only believes but actively asserts that this should be law, that a fertilized embryo is a living human being, and therefore in vitro fertilization should not be allowed. Because, you know, the way you do that is you take a bunch of eggs and a bunch of sperm and mix them all together, and then you see which ones combine and look like they're healthy and they're, you know, most viable. And then you take a couple of those and you implant them, and typically one sticks and you got a baby, right? But what this group is saying is that they're all babies. And when you pour those embryos down the drain, you are killing people. And therefore, that should be a criminal offense that you can put people in prison for or maybe even execute them for. This is our next Supreme Court justice. Really? And then David Beard is reporting from the Associated Press that People of Praise, which is the group, actually there was a piece in our local paper here about People of Praise here in Portland. They have a Portland presence. That People of Praise is a, you know, is this group that Amy Barrett has been a member of for apparently most of her life. He said, quote, this is from one of the stories about them. This is a wife and her members of the People of Praise. When she told her husband she wanted to wait to have more children, he began to accompany her to gynecological appointments to ensure that she could not get birth control. On Friday of last week, People of Praise removed all editions of their magazine, including all the references to Amy Coney Barrett, and apparently there are numerous ones. They've been active in that group for four decades, from their websites. We don't want people to know about this. Why not? I mean, either it is or it isn't. Either you're proud of it or you're not. Either this is, you know, what you advocate or not. But I think it's going to get interesting. I think, you know, these hearings, I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to stop the hearings, frankly. But what they could do is they could turn them into a referendum on the Trump presidency. Judge Barrett, would you please describe the emoluments clause to us? Do you think that the D.C. hotel... Actually, you wouldn't even have to ask about Trump. You can just say, could you please describe the emoluments clause? What would it mean at law if a president of the United States tried to get another country to insert itself into our elections, particularly using fraud or lies? What would that mean? I mean, what would it mean if the president of the United States let 200,000 people die? Hi, Tom Hartman here. In my new book, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream, I'll be taking you from the birth of America as a revolt against monopoly, remember the Boston Tea Party, to the largely successful efforts of both Presidents Theodore and Franklin Roosevelt and other like-minded leaders
to constrain corporations' monopolistic urges, to the massive changes in the rules of business starting during the Reagan Revolution that have brought us into the cancer stage of capitalism. In the foreword by Ralph Nader, he says, "This is the most important dynamic book on the cancers of monopoly by giant corporations written in our generation," end quote. It's the fourth in my Hidden History series. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Democracy starts with you. Tag, you're it. Simon in Aberdeen, New Jersey. Hey, Simon, what's up?
In the event that Trump loses, do you think it would be incumbent on Biden to ask the Trump administration to be allowed to take over the whole coronavirus issue?
I get what you're thinking, Simon, but A, it wouldn't be appropriate, and B, Trump would not agree to it. I guarantee you that. What I think Biden should do if he wins is the day after the win is defined, is scheduled, he should name his entire cabinet. And his cabinet officers should start holding daily briefings about what they will be doing and what they would do differently. I would love to hear from his Secretary of Education about how they're going to fix our public schools and undo the damage that was done by Betsy DeVos. I would love to hear from his administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency. I realize it's not part of the cabinet, but I would love to hear from that person specifically about the damage that Wheeler, this coal lobbyist, has done as the head of the EPA. I'd love to hear from the head of the Interior, the Secretary of the Interior, about the damage that's going to be undone by the oil lobbyist running that agency. I would love to hear from the Secretary of Defense about, you know, what he thinks is going on, or she thinks. You know, I love your idea, Simon, but it ain't going to happen. And so what I'm offering is a practical alternative. In some other countries, they do this. It's called a shadow cabinet or a shadow government. Anybody from Great Britain knows exactly what I'm talking about. Alan in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to put up a, with all the Supreme Court stuff going on, if the Democrats win and take control of the Senate, do we not have the option of, number one, going after and impeaching this, I don't even want to mention her name because, like, she's a non-entity to me, the woman who will be appointed or who will be like Trump, and then go back and try to impeach Kavanaugh to try to get two of the seats back? Because
no.
this woman is being appointed by a president who really won illegally, and Kavanaugh should not have been approved because of the charges against him. I just don't see why they would not go after the judges at that point.
Unless we can demonstrate that those votes in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Ohio were manipulated by a foreign government, or that there was some other form of interference. I suppose you could argue that because he paid off Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal to be quiet before the election, I mean, that was a clear violation of election law. But the Constitution basically says the Electoral College decides the president, period, full stop. It also says that individual states can direct their electors to vote for whoever they damn well please. And that's the big problem we're facing. So to say that he was elected illegally and therefore is not going to work, number one. Number two, Alan, impeachment is a process that has to originate in the House of Representatives and then goes directly to the Senate, where, you know, the senators vote to remove somebody. If they didn't vote, if the senators would not even listen to a single witness, John Bolton is out today saying, "I wanted to testify to the Senate and I wanted my book out by then, but the White House was holding it up." If the Senate continues to basically stonewall on behalf of Donald Trump, I don't see any chance that that's going to be happening. Alan, thanks for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is by Ruth Marcus, Supreme Ambition, Brett Kavanaugh and the Conservative Takeover. This is from the prologue. Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy had a request. Would President Trump have a few minutes to speak privately? It was April 10th, 2017, a sparkling spring morning in Washington, and Kennedy was at the White House to preside over the ceremonial swearing-in of the newest Supreme Court Justice, Neil Gorsuch. First time in history that a sitting justice had sworn in one of his former law clerks to join him on the bench. Just 80 days into Trump's chaotic presidency, the confirmation of Gorsuch represented a rare and welcome victory for the beleaguered new administration, reeling from court defeats of its travel ban and, despite controlling both houses of Congress, unable to repeal President Obama's signature health care law.
Perhaps most important, as the prominent conservative lawyers, activists, and judges assembled in the Rose Garden that day understood, Gorsuch's addition was just one step, necessary but not sufficient, in the three-decades-long conservative bid to cement control over the high court. This effort had been as frustrating as it was lengthy. Seeming opportunities for dominance repeatedly slipped away, with Republican nominees, including Kennedy himself, turning out to be less reliably conservative than advertised. But Republicans have learned from these costly errors, assembling a farm team of potential nominees whose judicial records could be carefully scrutinized to detect any risk of ideological deviation. Gorsuch was among those who came bearing the seal of approval of the Federalist Society, the conservative legal group that had made itself the central actor in this court-shaping exercise and was playing an even more outsized role in the new administration. Trump took pains to single out one man who was not in the Rose Garden that day, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, for all he did to make this achievement possible, quoting Trump. Indeed, everyone present knew that McConnell had been the indispensable man leading to that moment. Had it not been for McConnell, President Obama would have filled the vacancy created by Justice Antonin Scalia's sudden death in February 2016, and Justice Merrick Garland would be sitting on the high court, anchoring a newly fortified liberal majority. McConnell, with his audacious announcement that the opening would not be filled, no matter that Obama had 11 months remaining in his term, had avoided that fateful outcome. His intervention meant that Gorsuch now occupied Scalia's seat, a conservative for conservative swap. The next vacancy was almost certain to be the far more critical one, shifting the court's balance instead of affirming it. On that score, all eyes were on the 80-year-old Kennedy, then serving his 30th year on the high court, and by dint of age, years of service, and political allegiance, the most likely to depart. The swing justice on an already conservative court, Kennedy was pleased about Gorsuch, but he had another former law clerk in mind as he was ushered into Trump's private dining room for an unusual session with the president and White House counsel Don McGahn. Justices are routinely invited to the White House for social events, state dinners, and holiday parties, but at least until Trump took office, such one-on-one meetings were rare in the modern era, with its finicky notions about preserving the appearance of judicial independence. Unlike the relaxed days when justices did double duty as private counselors to presidents such as Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson. In the chronically leaky Trump White House, aides took pains to keep the Trump-Kennedy meeting secret. There were no public reports about the session, and only a few senior officials ever learned what Kennedy said to Trump that day. The justices' message to the president was as consequential as it was straightforward, and it was a remarkable insertion by a sitting justice into the distinctly presidential act of judge picking. As a candidate, Trump had upended tradition by issuing a list of judges. It ultimately grew to 21, including Gorsuch, from which he pledged to pick his Supreme Court nominees. Now Kennedy had a recommendation for Trump's list. "You named one of my former clerks," Kennedy told Trump. "You should think about another one, Brett Kavanaugh." When Anthony Kennedy spoke, the Trump White House listened, with good reason. During the campaign, when Trump, against all expectations, emerged as the Republican nominee and ultimate victor over Hillary Clinton, the issue of judicial selection had been a utilitarian means to an electoral end. The socially conservative and evangelical voters Trump needed to win were deeply, understandably suspicious of the thrice married, once Democratic New Yorker. They were particularly dubious about how Trump would approach the critical task of shaping the federal judiciary, especially the Supreme Court. The list of high court candidates that Trump produced with the help of the Federalist Society, upending convention with typical Trumpian bravado, was explicitly aimed at calming their concerns, and it succeeded beyond the wildest expectations of its creators. On Election Day, more than a quarter of Trump voters identified the Supreme Court as the critical factor in determining their vote. White, evangelical, born-again Christians broke 81% for Trump to 16% for Hillary Clinton, meaning that Trump outperformed previous Republican nominees Mitt Romney, John McCain, and George W. Bush among such voters. In office, Trump not only keenly understood the politics of judicial selection and its importance for his reelection, he also gained a new appreciation for what the Supreme Court meant to a president's legacy. Thanks to McConnell's ruthlessness, Trump had inherited what no president had before, the gift of an existing vacancy. Supreme Ambition by Ruth Marcus.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.